Welcome to New Oral Cultures. My name is Dario Linares, and down the line today, I'm with my co-editor, co-producer of the podcast, that's Richard Berry. Richard, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. I'm just feeling a little bit guilty that we've taken a little bit of time to get our next episode out. Unfortunately, we're not adhering to the advice of keeping the momentum going in your podcast, I'm afraid. But I think it's all right for this one, because I think it's whenever we've got some audio to put out there, then it's always going to be there, this sort of podcast platform for us.
Yeah, we're a bit like buses, aren't we? Nothing happens and then three come along at once.
So obviously you've just heard the episode that Richard put out with his students, which I thought was really, really great, Richard. I mean, how did you feel about it when you'd... obviously you put the episode out and you'd give the intro, but, you know, did you feel it went well? It was a good exercise for the students?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an idea that I kind of floated to them and said, how do you fancy putting together an episode of the podcast? And they were like, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, let's do that. And we did it, honestly, as more of an exercise with them in thinking about podcasting, because I was really interested to hear what they have to say about the medium. One of the great things about the module has been talking to them about their understanding of the medium as digital natives. You know, for you and me, this is something sure. that kind of came along quite late in our sort of careers as listeners or as producers. But for them, you know, this has been around since they were teenagers. So that was interesting. But also, as an experiment, we pulled it together in an afternoon. I think, you know, 2 hours, something like that, to make it. It's like, right, there you go, into the studios, record, edit it down a little bit just to tighten it up. So they were recorded for about 20 minutes each, something like that, and then cut them down to sort of 10, 15 minutes, and then stitched it together in our podcast platform. So it's kind of a technical exercise, but also an exercise in them talking and thinking about podcasting.
Yeah, and I think it does that job very well of getting them to sort of be self-reflexive in the moment of doing the actual media. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes I think that like with film particularly and the filmmaking that the students that we deal with, we tend to get them to just make the film and then sort of reflect on paper afterwards. But I think something about podcasting is that there's a sort of ingrained self-reflexivity in the process. So you can hear the kind of cogs going through their mind as they're speaking, as how am I coming across? How am I going to segue onto the next person? All
yeah,
that kind
I think
of stuff.
The nature of it, you say, a lot of the things we do when we teach production is they make a production and it happens right at the end. And as we know, learning is an ongoing process. One of the groups that you've heard, you know, they've been looking for an excuse to do this for years, if you like, and they're now sort of 7 episodes into what they do, and every episode is a learning experience. It's why I've written the module in the way I did. You know, I've not said hand in one podcast at the end of the module. It's like, get out there, make them, deliver more than one.
Yeah.
So hopefully the last one's better than the first one.
Yeah, absolutely. And also it serves the purpose that we want for the new Oral Cultures kind of network, which again hopefully will develop over time, where people submit or producers submit, or whether it's academics or students, something that we can then put out on our network, because we want to sort of have it as that conduit for podcasters who maybe don't have their own kind of regular platform and just want to put out a bespoke episode. So that's really good. So on to the today's episode. So as I said earlier, this is a recording of the final discussion of a number of the contributors, a number of the presenters at the Podcasting Poetics Conference, which took place... God, when did you do it? It was...
October.
Yeah, it was the second week, wasn't it? Second week in October, that's it.
Yeah.
So this took place in the second week in October, and both you and I were lucky enough to give keynote speeches at the conference, and you kicked it off very well. Again, with a paper that sort of, I suppose, addressed some of the key questions again around definitions of podcasting. And I think that was a theme that went through the the entire event. And it was a fairly big event for a podcasting conference. I mean, it wasn't the size of the Sound Education one in America, but it's the first one I've been to in Europe. And I think one of the interesting aspects of it was hearing some of the non-English language podcasters talking about, you know, English language podcasts, but also podcasts from Germany and other parts of the world. And I mean, they did a great job in translating for us English speakers who just expect everyone to speak our language. But that was a really interesting aspect, and I think is one of the things going forward that podcasting research is going to have to do, try to break those boundaries of English language, non-English language.
Yeah, and I think it's strange how there are parallels, you know, that we've had discussions with them after on email afterwards. And I think some of the things that the researchers in Germany were finding about the status of podcasting and how it's developed come through in other work. I think one of the things came up on email since the conference was this idea around technology and sound quality and things like that, and how that might be an evolving kind of process. And chatting to one of our former MA students who's now doing a PhD in Portugal, and one of her kind of peers on that study program has been talking to her about how similar patterns are coming through in Portugal. So I think what has been really interesting, I think, is that, as you say, that dominance of English language studies. So from the US, from Australia, from the UK. And it's great that we're seeing that kind of development and that kind of push ahead, if you like, with scholarship in other languages.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely the sort of movement forward in terms of podcast studies, as you say. And I think another aspect that I found really interesting was the sort of methodologies and the questions about methodologies going forward. And I think that someone definitely was raising the issue that the sort of aesthetic analysis, the sort of textual analysis of podcasting is something that hasn't really taken hold yet. And the discussions of things like more contextual issues and technological issues, I think, are more at the forefront. But maybe we're coming to that point now where researchers are able to not have to write 1,000 words at the beginning of their papers about what podcasting is, and just kind of move straight into it, which is, I think, a place we need to get to as podcasting researchers.
Yeah, I mean, that was your kind of big point that you kind of pushed quite a few times during the conference. Mm. Is you say that you spend a long time trying to initiate people into the conversation by saying, well, in 2004, Ben Hammersley and The Guardian and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Ben Hammersley first and then you come second, you know what I mean, with your piece. So which is great, but it's kind of like, you know, it's that moment of when's the next move forward, as you say. Sorry.
Yeah, because I think, you know, it's all very flattering, but it's like, it's moved on. Come on, let's find the next thing, you know, and as you say, I think it's great that people are starting to think about, you know, aesthetics and textuality and all those kinds of different approaches. And I think actually the thing that was interesting about the conference is how many people were coming from sort of literary studies and kind of applying those approaches into podcasting, which I haven't seen before in kind of published work. So I think it's great that that's starting to happen, because I think the great thing for me about podcast studies and why I keep banging the drum and saying let's call it podcast studies is it allows those kind of cross-disciplinary conversations to happen, and saying, you know, it shouldn't be restricted to thinking of it as another form of radio, because it's not. And but also that those conversations exclude other people from other disciplines.
Yeah, and there was the interesting paper on audiobooks as well, which sort of again asked that it sort of opened that can of worms as to where the boundaries of podcast studies are. And I think we got to the stage, but maybe I think we touched on it in this discussion coming up, the boundaries are sort of porous, or they're movable all the time, and maybe there isn't there never will be a set definition of podcasting, but it's a sense of where the analysis can take us in terms of placing it within a criteria of interest around sound knowledge and sound practice and all of those kinds of things. So I just wanted to say thanks very much to Patrick Gill and Alan Urritz, for organising the conference. They made us feel really welcome, and I thought it was a really, really well put together event and a great sort of panel of speakers across the 2 days. And also, it was really nice to meet our other keynote, Laurie Beckstead, who did a really great keynote on a very difficult project, I thought, she set herself a difficult task of sort of rating podcasts around a set of definitional criteria, which was very interesting. So I'm looking forward to speaking to her again. So this is the final discussion of the Podcasting Poetics Conference that took place in October in Mainz, in Germany.
We've talked about so many different things and we are from so many different disciplines. And I think that's a really good thing, because when you're thinking about, like I said at the beginning, if you're thinking about how do we research podcasting, how do we do good research into podcasting, we have to think about it within its medial specificity. And that idea of what is podcasting's medial specificity it's not something that's settled. Not that it's really settled in any medium, but we're just still trying to figure out what that might even be talking about. And so I really have enjoyed all of your contributions and your different ways of going about studying podcasting. And so, we have questions on the board. I think we've all had like a second to read them. Okay. So I'm going to have the person who wrote the question.
I'm still puzzled by how we explain the popularity of podcasts at this present moment in history, or researchers or people, I don't know, just people complain about not having enough time, so kind of decreasing time resources, and that researchers tell us that our attention spans are shrinking due to whatever, modern mass media, Twitter, whatever it is. And podcasts are, as we've seen generally, can be considered as a slow medium of long duration. So how do we kind of bring that together?
I've got a short answer to that, is that most other media is screen or video driven, and podcasting you can multitask. So I listen when I'm cooking, I listen when I'm walking, I listen when I'm doing a bunch of things, and I can't think of many other popular media these days where you can do that. Can't do it with gaming, you can't really do it with film, can't really do it reading, it's sort of, I think it's the ultimate sort of accompaniment to other activities.
But I feel at the same time we are witnessing this binge-watching, binge-listening culture. And I think if we can watch a new Netflix series on a whole weekend, why shouldn't we be listening to podcasts for the same duration? So I feel like while we are talking about attention spans shrinking, how does that work with binge-watching? Because then you have to pay attention for so many hours. So I think maybe it's a paradox that we are doing both. We are either putting all of our attention into something and really listening and really spending time with something, or we are taking only smaller, kind of looking at Twitter, scrolling, and don't really pay attention. And then you can have shorter
attention. With podcasting, I'll do the same, listening-wise. Like, I'll listen to a whole lot. I'll listen to a series in a row. It's just the same as I would with screen. Is that not common?
So it is this binge listening, right? Yeah. So in a way, we are paying attention.
I think there's a few things to that. So I would firstly agree that kind of the presumption that we is kind of fake is too strong to say, but it's not entirely correct, perhaps, to say. And we have always been told in journalism schools you have to do it shorter, 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 shorter. So we did it shorter, 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 shorter. So in some kind of way, perhaps we are at least as journalists part of the problem in doing this formatting even further. While on the other hand, as you said, other things just stayed in the same format pretty much. Feature film is still the same length or even longer. And a series is also still approximately the same length. So we didn't cut down there. And so I think the podcast in some way is a backlash that there is kind of a longing for these longer forms and kind of a deep dive into one issue, because we, with this information overflow we kind of get when we expose ourselves to news, for instance, we can't really get that background. And so the podcast, at least in the non-fictional podcast where kind of I come from, I'd say that's kind of a backlash to this faster information society, perhaps.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think there's an anxiety produced by all of the short, you know, the fire hose of information through social media and all of that. And I think podcasts are the antidote to that. People crave the depth, and they do have the time to do it. In fact, I think it was maybe Edison, or maybe it was the Canadian Podcast Consumer Research Report that showed that people, the question was, what are you doing while you're listening to podcasts? And the assumption has traditionally been that people are always doing something else, that they're commuting, they're exercising, they're cleaning, they're whatever it is they're doing. And there was a huge chunk of people who said, nothing, I'm just relaxing. Yeah. And so I think that's part of it. Yeah. It's getting away from the fire hose of everyday life and just going deep with one thing. And it feels luxurious to do that, I think.
Just like the slow cooking movement.
I think that there are different ways of thinking about attention, which is why I wrote Attention Engagement. And when you think about the length and how, like, compared to quality television, right? There's just so much content on a podcast like Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is at least an hour every week. Every week, Christmas, everything. So there's just so much time that you're spending with the content. And people, like, if you're studying literature, you're teaching, we're trained in a way of thinking, this is what it means to pay attention to something. And it's this very close kind of close reading, literally and not always, but like it's this very close thing where you're kind of dissecting something and all of this stuff. And that might not be the only way to pay attention to something. You might be able to engage with something and care about something and not have to dissect it and listen to every bit. If you take a podcast like Sleep With Me, which is really long, but it's definitely like the point is to put you to sleep, right? The point is that it will be there for that time. And if you're awake or if you're asleep, it doesn't matter. So engagement and attention are these kind of, And if you look at work on photography by Margaret Allen, and it about how, like, non-Western ideas of engaging or paying attention to photography. There's a lot that has to do more with about relating it to your life and things like that, and not kind of dissecting it. So, I don't know. There's just more going on.
But is that about a bit like Netflix? You know, people will binge a series in a night.
Mm-hmm.
Is podcasting like that because people are coming to it? They're opting in. So the reason they're listening is it already has their attention, if you like, unlike television, which has to fight for it.
Yeah, it has their attention, but not necessarily in a way that means I need to listen to every single part of it. It's has your attention in that I want to engage with this cultural product in a way that, you know, that's I find pleasurable.
And edifying. Mm-hmm. I was going to go back to the article by Jonah Viner. From Slate in 2004, when he talked about this, it's candy that doesn't rot your teeth. It's binging without the bloat. It's something that you feel edified by. And I think there's definitely an attraction, maybe somewhere in the back of our minds, about podcasting in that sense. I feel like I've done something good for me by having engaged with a podcast. a long one as opposed to flicking through Twitter or something.
Which is really interesting when you consider podcasts like My Dad Wrote a Porno, where you are also possibly binge listening to erotica being commented on humoristically by three friends. And then the question is this still ennobling? Do you still feel like you're learning something and this is kind of edifying? Or does that depend then on the content? And you are kind of talking about the more in-depth learning about something, maybe a history podcast that is quite long. Or does that also connect to the form or the medium itself? So that would be my question. So is that a difference? Because you could possibly also binge watch a documentary series. And then maybe you would have the same effect and you would go, oh, I've learned something. This is great. This is helping me develop, possibly. So I think it's also dependent on the content and then maybe how you connect podcasts to a specific content.
That's a good point. Maybe Jonah Weiner's mindset at the time that he wrote that, I think, was, again, we talked about this, you know, the idea of the liberal elite attraction in podcasting and what is sort of critically acclaimed. And, you know, he was naming all of the podcasts that are not the sort of truly kind of just wasting your time and having fun, so to speak. I mean, not that having fun is wasting your time, but it's a really good point. Yeah.
I think there's something coming back to, like, explaining the boom of what you're saying about media and information, you know, what they call soundbite culture, things getting shorter and shorter and, you know, people getting snippets of information. And it comes back to that idea of sort of the media and what is reality. So I think we're sort of post-reality television and reality, or at least the way podcasting sold a lot of the time is it's actually, you know, extended interviews that we call conversations, you know, specifically rather than interviews, longer form journalism. And, you know, like a return to, I can't remember where I was reading it, but a return to, you know, there used to be chat shows back in the day on television that had really long interviews analogous to what's going on now. So it's that sort of, it's a combination of factors.
Yeah, I think that relates to sort of television and film in terms of the sort of press junket culture.
Yeah, you got it.
You know, so you've got these 10 minute interviews where they come in, sell the product, and they go. And I think there's a revitalization of the chat show form or the conversation as an actual form, and therefore, you know, when they say about, you know, Marc Maron, for example, there's something about the way he interviews that he brings something out of the guest that they're willing to give. And now podcasting has got to the point where there's a sense that the guests know that before they go on, and they're not going on just to, although, you know, there is an element of, I've got a new film out, but you may have 10 minutes of that and then 50 minutes of the entire career. And
you've made me realize it's analogous to, in your presentation, when you were discussing how, I can't remember exactly how you framed it, but podcasting isn't something that was sort of like, you know, built by Sony and delivered. It was a combination of factors, because you've made me realize another layer we could add is, you know, even the reasonably informed layperson is aware of the influence of PR as a part of that soundbite culture and how we market a politician or we market an actor. And so I think it's a response to that as well, you know, like, here's the bullshit version of the person, and here's supposedly, although everyone's mediating one way or another, right? But it's the more realistic version of something at this stage.
Some of those Marc Maron interviews, they're almost the antithesis of that. We'll talk about everything in your life apart from the movie
you've got. And Rogan will go on ad nauseum about you know, like, about the problems with that sort of, you know, 4-second version of the person and so on. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting you sort of talk about the podcast boom, what the discourse of that is changing, I think, where, you know, we're talking about podcasts being popular from 2014, let's say, and there's this crossover moment and we can sort of talk about it in those terms. But then now it's, you know, we've all been sort of mentioning this sort of consolidation or platformatization, and is that actually going to cause a boom, but in a way that is going to be exclusory to certain types of podcasts, and, you know, is going to push much more mainstream, formulaic kinds of output, perhaps.
That leads really well into the next question, I think, which I see now is very much in written English. So bear with me. As podcasting influences other media, which we heard about in the Storytel originals and the audiobooks and the Swedish audiobooks, as podcasting influences other media and cultural practices begin carrying the name podcast that evade our definitions of the medium, definitions, really broadly speaking, evade what we've been talking about and defining podcasting as a medium. What specific characteristics of podcasting, storytelling, and poetics can we use to help in the search for future definitions? So as podcasting, as people say, yeah, I watch podcasts on YouTube. Okay. And the paywalls and all of these things that as like, I guess, a old school podcasting hipster or whatever I am, I think, wait, that's not podcasting. But to those people, it is podcasting, right? And as that happens, is there something that we can use in how podcasting tells stories that will help us in our definitions?
It's interesting, isn't it? The BBC document that I kind of quoted from, you know, where they say the podcasts are not radio, but for the young listeners they're targeting, it's their radio in kind of inverted commas. And it may be that is, as you say, for some people, podcasts on YouTube, it's their version of podcast. I don't know. But I don't know. I think you're right. There's got to be kind of a vocabulary. Hmm. Just talking to Annie earlier, we're talking about the definitions of radio and how you define radio against, say, a music stream on Spotify. And kind of one of the definitions became, if you like, how you agree it is, sort of is an element of production, you know, in that has somebody made the decision. And whether there's an equivalency within podcasting that might be around seriality, it might be around subscription, that it's delivered in some way, or whether it's, I think, you know, Dari is talking about that kind of taking away the technology and then actually looking at it from the other end.
Well, you mentioning production, that's almost beyond that list, I think. I mean, for me, with my show, I can't remember whether it's part of my intro regularly, but I have said a number of times to the listeners that, or to the guests, so that the listeners know that I basically don't edit where possible, and that's quite, I mean, I'm talking about a specific kind of podcast here, the conversation podcast. I know there's many other genres and styles, but in that genre, it sort of seems the bigger shows often wear that as a badge of sort of honour, that it's not kind of cut up and manipulated. Although, funnily enough, when Maron had his 1,000th episode celebration, and like I joked about yesterday, my show's either a homage or a rip-off, I was quite taken aback that he said, oh, Brendan, my producer, you know, spends a week tweaking it afterwards, moving it around, you know, removing parts, I'd said. So there's an allusion to that. But anyway, to my core point there, I think, yeah, we can talk about production elements as well and, like, what defines the medium, yeah.
I think somebody was saying something yesterday about podcasts that kind of they check in with their guests, and I know that Griefcast, they send the guest the episode and the guest signs off on it. The guest isn't happy that, you know, they don't post it. So whether there's an honesty in,
well, that came up in that first focus group I did. Yeah, that, I mean, I haven't got a full set of data at the moment because one group, but, you know, more than one person expressed that there is sort of an unwritten, you know, hey, if you're not happy with any of this, we'll gladly take it down. And actually, you just reminded me that when I message people, if they're not familiar, because a lot of people aren't podcast listeners who'll agree to do them, I'll basically say, I'm not out to get a scoop, you know? I'm not out to, like, get that little nugget on you where we can all go, ooh. But, you know, we'll talk as honestly as you want to. So it's sort of a different approach than someone looking for that tabloid headline or, you know, yeah.
I feel like a lot of the time when we were talking about definitions of the medium, and also from what I've read in the literature, it seems like we're trying to often get to a certain ideal of podcasting. We're kind of referring to the freedom, the equality, to that there's no institutionalization and no censorship. And that's kind of already looking back a certain amount, and kind of looking to the heyday, kind of the first wave of podcasts where that might have been true, which is kind of now receding in the background. And I was kind of reminded of a current, well, it's not that current anymore, discourse on YouTube. I have no idea if you guys follow that, but people talking about when YouTube just started and do you remember what it means to be a YouTuber, and kind of people making that distinction and saying YouTube isn't YouTube anymore, even though the platform, of course, is the same. So podcasting might not be podcasting anymore, kind of is turning into something else. And yeah. I don't think at this point in time we are able to really pinpoint it, because it's changing so rapidly that it seems to me in a year or even in a couple of months, we have no idea how it's going to look like. So kind of trying to get at a clear definition is probably going to evade us until podcasting is no more. I don't know.
and here's a quick example, because I think a few of us expressed it in different ways, that we're at some sort of juncture, right, with podcasting. So I've been thinking about, you know, if the dollar is the bottom line, especially in a country like the States, what happens to a show like Joe Rogan's or even Maron's, where you're suddenly dealing with that amount of listenership and revenue? You know, you've got more listeners than US networks are getting viewers these days. What happens with the guests start demanding payment? You know, there's a whole lot of things that start to really alter this idealism, as you say, we're discussing, when a simple thing like as I say, revenue comes into play with those bigger shows. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there, or what's happening behind the scenes that we don't know about, you know, that might be changing what we're hearing.
I think the conference generally has shown that there's a porousness to the definitional attempts. And I think, you know, we've kind of written about, you know, the idea of it being a flexible medium or a liminal medium, or a medium that's defined by its indefinability. And even something like the example of BBC Sounds, that branding change, it's not BBC Radio anymore, it's not BBC Podcast, it's BBC Sounds. It's like, and I think you mentioned a reference, I can't remember what it was, was calling it like sound work. Yeah. So that's an interesting way of actually moving away from the very podcast label itself. And, you know, we use it because it's there now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of difficult to say, oh, well, I'm going to be the one to say, no, it doesn't exist. It's not a thing. But I think it would be, I'm definitely going to try in my own writing now to not start at the beginning of an article saying, this is what podcasting is, and then I'm going to talk about something. I'm not going to do that. So this is this example, and this is what it does, and then leave it to others to kind of...
Because you wouldn't start a TV studies article explaining what television is.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of work trying to figure out what television is, especially right now. So you would write a book trying to ask what television is.
Mm.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that as well, because a long time we had an easy choice to have these technological definitions, I guess. So in Germany, there's this standard television definition, which was kind of, well, this is broadcasted over electrical waves and blah, blah, blah. And nowadays, that doesn't really apply. And then there's, because it had jurisdictional kind of influence, so they rewrote it, and now it's kind of along a scheme and broadcasted live and blah blah blah. And so nowadays that we have all these Twitch streamers which have a schedule, and as soon as they have a schedule, they are television, which they wouldn't really apply to that, and they now need licenses, and they are kind of sued because they don't have those licenses and so on. So I think we are not alone with the podcast. That's what I think I want to say. So yeah, we definitely are not alone, and it's it was easier with the old newspapers. So yeah.
Let me just say that Jenkins was right all along. Basically, it's just transmedia.
Yeah, yeah. It's really hard to define nowadays. That's right. Yeah, I think we really can only at the moment get into it in retrospective.
Yeah. I wondered what everybody thought about though, the. Over in the United States, all the talk is, you look at all the conferences and all the podcasting festivals, it's all about monetization. Yeah. It's all about commercialization. How do I make money out of this? And I'm kind of, I have to acknowledge it's there as a thing and the American market pushes all of that, but I kind of don't care. You know what I mean? And I wondered where everybody else sort of sits on that.
I think, like I said yesterday, I think we're in a luxurious space, and we have full time work that we can assume pays
for sure.
Better than a lot do. But so say for my students leaving a communications degree, I would love if they couldn't get a job in one of the traditional media organizations, that they could figure out a way to derive revenue from their online media projects. And I think that's of far more importance to me than the idea of kind of some Spotify, they've invested all this money monetizing all these shows, Yeah, it's about new media careers emerging in some meaningful way.
Look, I realize the sort of privilege of that question to begin with, but then it sort of leads me back to the very idea of, are we talking about the medium as an art form, as an aesthetic form, as a cultural evocation product, whatever, or is it all just back to the neoliberal logic? I don't know.
It's like a clash. It's art, but it can make money.
I think, on the other hand, because you talked about the conventions where people are actually learning how to monetize correctly and how to get advertisers, you also, on the other hand, have conventions by fans. So just podcasters meeting fans and kind of getting into a discussion. And I think that's probably where we might also look at a podcast and kind of the audiences and actually the interactions of people, because then the money kind of recedes into the background, at least for the interaction of podcaster, host, and then fan as well. And I think that's quite interesting as well, maybe more idealistic.
I think that's it. I haven't been to podcast movement, right? But I went to the Maker workshops at the London Podcast Festival, so not so American. And when I was there, I thought, at least the things I went to, it was a very different discourse about fans and monetization. And there were people saying, the goal in advertising your podcast and getting your podcast out there is to find whoever wants to listen to your podcast. It's not about getting the biggest audience possible. It's about finding the people who are interested in your random niche thing, right? And then there were people saying that, like, just, informally chatting with people, they were talking about kind of, there's this feeling that all of this, the not podcasting things they have to do to engage with fans, to get their podcast out there, was an incredible strain and an incredible amount of, I guess, effective labor that they were doing.
It's like that old, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that creative industries discourse, the sort of individual as the I can't think how you
express it, like
the one man, the one person business who promotes and invoices and so on. I was thinking an example. I'm like a dog with a bone with this. Thinking of students coming out of institutions. We've got a few of our major radio stations have. Commercial network stations have started to include podcasts with some of their younger staff. And when I checked in with one of those people, she said that they're doing it, for love or experience. There's issues there wider than discussing podcasting around kind of intern culture. Whereas I grew up, you do something when I was that age and you invoice someone. Okay, and I don't know, but just thinking about this whole monetization issue. To me, I guess what I'm trying to express is everyone needs an income, but it's just motivation and who's behind again, I think I'm repeating myself from last time. It's who's making the money and why and what for, and ultimately how that affects podcasting is something we enjoy, you know.
There's slight uncomfortableness a bit about that stuff you were saying around how you find your audience. It's like a professionalization of the medium that kind of, I don't know, it slightly makes me uncomfortable because it's almost, unless you're professional, you're not a proper podcaster, you know, so you must edit perfectly. You must have a logo that looks like this because that's what our research says, or you must have, you know, a market researched audience almost. I don't know if that was your feeling of that.
I mean, the panel that where he said that was like introduction to podcasting. So it wasn't, this was not like, this was people with like, oh, I think I'm going to do like get a Blue Yeti. Like, it's like, these are different types of microphones and this is how much they cost, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it was very much aimed at just normal people. You know, it wasn't aimed at professionals. And so it was definitely, I don't think it was finding your audience in this wider marketing sense. It was just like, yeah, it was very different. It was, you don't have to have the biggest audience to be successful. That's not what makes a successful podcast. But I would like to tie what I said about the kind of emotional labor that goes in to maintaining a fan network into what you said, because you're coming at this from the point of view of the fans and how great it is to build those communities and things like that. And yeah, and at the same time, that is a lot of labor.
It's not being paid for. Yeah. And that's a huge issue that people keep discussing in fandom studies, because they say fans, there's so much labor that goes into fan transformative work, and then often companies kind of make a profit from what fans do, and they kind of see, oh, this is where this is going, this is where the fandom is going, and now we are the ones marketing it. We're kind of jumping on the bandwagon and producing all of these apps and all of these things so that fans further kind of engage with the text and our material and buy more stuff and so on. But the fans themselves aren't getting paid, but they are doing labor. And so there have been arguments that should fans be paid for their work, especially if it is, for example, in a context, for example, of gaming, and they are testing games for developers. Shouldn't they be paid for that work? But on the other hand, if they get paid for it, it's not fan labor anymore. And so it kind of loses this loving, oh, I'm doing this just for fun and I'm doing it for the work itself. So it's such a dilemma, and I have no answer for that. But yeah. Just not paying someone isn't the answer if they have to, as you said, eat.
There's issues there, I think, for producers as well. We're sort of coming back to like being able to, I'm totally into, you know, for enjoyment, I bought good equipment. I decided I'm going to speak to a bunch of interesting people I've always wanted to speak to. I'm going to get back into editing, da 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 da. But again, it's about, you know, who's involved and what for. So I build my own website, but I've still got to gift my content to Apple and to Spotify to be like a, you know, to be on the map, as it were. So it's just bizarre to me, as I say, because I've lived in, but I'm not young enough that I only know that world. So it's kind of like, it's still an odd notion to me that I am producing this stuff and then freely giving it to this guy who's a billionaire in his 30s, the Spotify guy, you know? Maybe I should send Spotify an invoice. Do they even have an address on the website? I don't know.
But there's the sense that you can't be outside of the structures that are available at any given time, right? So, like, is it better that, yeah, we've got social media and we've got Facebook and they can distribute the things that we produce, or all the other mechanisms that go into podcasting that we have to go through Apple and all that kind of stuff? Or, I mean, the option is then that you record at home and put stuff on discs and send it out to your mates like fanzine style. Yeah. Or, do we go back to the days where you were only on in the UK, if you weren't on the BBC, you were nowhere. You know, at least there are sort of avenues of distribution and the potential to monetize, you know, in ways that we haven't had before. And again, podcasting, that's what was great about it to begin with. And I don't want to go back to that idealization of the past, but that's where the things are sort of changing slightly, where I think it's more difficult to have that kind of breakout podcast than maybe it was in previous years.
On cassette only.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Sorry, Laurie. Yeah.
It's gone. Go ahead. It'll come back.
I was actually going to move to the next question, which was yours.
No. I didn't write it down.
Oh, I remembered what I wanted to say.
If that's all right.
Yeah.
So this idea of monetization, I think of someone who embarks on a general interest podcast and hopes to make money from it. I liken that to, and sorry, again, a Canadian reference here, but I liken that to being a hockey player and wanting to get into the NHL, right, the professional league. And you know, But I think where the opportunities exist, and certainly for my students, where I see them going into is networks, podcasting networks, as well as major entertainment companies that are developing podcasting branches. So they're going, they're finding employment there. And on the other end of the spectrum, where I see it being perhaps lucrative is for entrepreneurs in a niche market. So for example, I mentioned to you that I love to sew. There's a podcast called Love to Sew. They put out an episode that's at least an hour long every week, and it's done by two women who run sewing businesses. One runs an online fabric shop, and the other one runs a pattern, an independent pattern company. And so their podcast is 100% tied to their business. And so every ounce of effort that they put into that podcast, I think, probably pays off, literally pays off in their business, in their entrepreneurship. So to me, it's sort of those ends of the spectrum where there's potential to actually kind of make a living. And in the middle, it's a bit of a, you know,
yeah, I know you want to go to the next question, but I hear that with students and establishing themselves, you know, there's something great about a group doing the same thing. But you also made me think that, you know, I think you could embark on a podcast and perhaps, you know, have some sort of endorsement, whether it's like clothing or whatever. I'm just saying, but that, you know, as a media producer, I think that might be one thing you're doing. I think you find those sort of self-starter people wouldn't just be doing a podcast. They might also be doing some other kind of media project. And then, you know, you sort of, you have four or five things on the go and one feeds the other, you know, as people do with things like music promotion, you know? Yeah. So there's that would be a logical way to.
I think you have to be mindful of the amount of labor though that goes into it, you know, the sheer number of hours. And if you paid yourself minimum wage, or if you were able to earn minimum wage from producing a podcast, I'd be surprised for the majority of people who, I mean, I, you know, my podcast, it was never intended to make money, but we were able to sell some advertising because it's very niche. And I've just spilled my tea all over my lap, but I'm going to continue talking because we're on a podcast. but, you know, I'm in the hole about $800 just paying for the platforms that we're on and that sort of thing. So it's truly a labor of love. And yeah, so your idea about doing a number of things, well, those things add up to, you know, hours and hours beyond what we would consider full-time work, I think, in a regular week just to make that happen. So it's a problem.
Who had the last question?
Oh, the last question was me.
It was you. I can't read your...
So it's about... Well, what I was aware of is that we're all from different parts of the world, and I was wondering if there were national sounds to podcasts. So we hear a lot about, you know, the American sound, the NPR voice, which we know has been aped in Australia. But I wondered if there's kind of domestic sounds coming out of you know, Germany, New Zealand, and so on, other parts of Europe, that partly because they're in different languages other than English, but whether there's like a homegrown kind of sound going on in different countries that where people are using what's natively podcast.
Yeah, he's the one there.
You're dying to say something.
No,
I thought you meant.
No, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, if you,
he doesn't. Yeah, I don't have the effect plug in with me, so I can demonstrate.
national feature of pitch shifting German voices.
But I don't know, is there a German equivalent to the NPR sound or the BBC sound, which really sort of defines British culture, the idea of what BBC radio has been for 50 years, you know?
I don't think that there's this... Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a German radio sound, I guess, and I think she has left, but her last example of this podcast,
Transformer?
Transformer, thanks, yeah. Her voice was very much this radio host voice. I thought so that really sounded like, even it was a podcast, it to me sounded like this typical German radio host voice, and I get annoyed when I hear that. Nevertheless, so that's kind of one thing. And I think the other thing is, in especially in Germany, I don't know if it's how it's in other places, but in Germany the early stages of kind of independent podcasting are very much tied to the hacker community. So the CCC, the Chaos Computer Club, which is the German hacker organization, was one of the first kind of people to engage into podcasting. So kind of their influence in sound and their lay approach to those people didn't know anything about audio or radio or something like that. They just started out, so kind of their sound is still, I think, around a little bit. It's not the most part anymore, but it's still there. So I think those kind of two things are there.
With New Zealand, I could probably speak to the public radio, you know, that public radio style of podcast and broadcast. But firstly, we have a team of hobbits edit our shows, and Peter Jackson starting a podcast. It's going to be the longest podcast ever. It's going to be a hostage situation rather than a podcast like his films. But what's happened with RNZ that I had it up on a slide. It occurred to me later after I did the presentation. I sort of got terrified that it wasn't even about my topic, but it was interesting nonetheless that now that RNZ, Radio New Zealand, our state broadcaster, are producing podcasts rather than putting up broadcast content like old documentaries, you know, as downloadable content, the voice and the style and I think the intended audience is changing as well. So we have that very you know, not uncommon upper white middle class style of public radio. So it's supposed to be the nation's radio station, but the demographic that mainly listen doesn't reflect that. But then there's podcasts like, I'm thinking of one called Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, which is with a comedian who talks really honestly with people about mental health, and, you know, a lot of F-bombs and so on get through. But it's certainly not that, remembering that New Zealand was once very much an arm of the British Empire, it's so far removed from that BBC style of public radio that we started with. So podcasting is changing. If we're talking national sounds, it's changing the sound, in my opinion, of our national or state broadcaster, which I think is a really healthy thing because it's opening it up to a lot wider audience, younger audience too. Yeah.
It's interesting because to me, you guys are answering a different question. You're answering the question, how does podcasting sound different in different countries? And to me, are there national sounds is a very different question. I went to this conference on monuments, and it got me thinking, okay, and people were researching, like, this is what's the difference between a memorial and a monument? What do monuments look like? And it just got me thinking, what do monuments sound like? And the thing I could think of was resonance, and then when I was thinking about things like the NPR politics podcast, nations also sound like people and voices. And whose voice is that national sound? And what voices are that national sound? And that's a very political question. So I think it's also showing kind of the interdisciplinary nature of the conference, that we have these two very different ways of reading that question and what that means. And I'm giving myself the last word on that because I want just 30 seconds at least for us to talk about some of the podcasting the pod portmanteaus that have been coming up this whole conference. I'll start with Podfather for Richard Berry. He's our pod.
I think Adam Curry would have an argument.
Can someone explain to me why he's the Podfather?
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Somebody else has to explain.
I think there'd be an argument with Adam Curry about that.
Are you the academic Podfather?
Yes.
Don't think so. Okay.
The academic Podfather.
Right.
My whole life is academia. I know nothing else. You are the academic Podfather. Anyway, you had a good one.
Well, I'm an academic Podler, a podcasting toddler, just wandering into the research field and podcasting.
Oh, God, I have no idea. I'll try and think. Go to somebody else.
I did wonder, don't know if you've heard the term, but journalists who then convert to academia call themselves hackademics. Oh. You know, it's that merging of podcasting and academic. I don't know if there's a way we can... if there's,
academics. Yeah, no, that, I was putting up my hand to say, yeah, that's me. I'm a hackademic.
It's just like air puns, the sections.
I call myself a podolescent.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
No,
well,
others? I thought of one too. So we talked about the queue down, which is where you know, your subscriptions have piled up and you're worried about missing out. And so I read a post by some woman who booked a weekend and had a queue down. So she just powered through everything, listened to some of them on, you know, double time speed, et cetera. But that could also be referred to as pondoing your queue, Marie Kondoing.
Pondoing.
Sorry, this is getting really bad, isn't it?
Listening at a faster speed would be pod fasting, though pod fasting may in fact be a self-imposed period of not listening or binging, as it were, on podcasts.
That's a new one.
Well, academic work on podcasts is great, but how about pedagogical projects?
Very good.
Yes. Is this getting too cheesy yet?
No such thing. I'm trying to think of a podcasting portmanteau to say, let's end this and get something to eat and drink, but I can't, so let's
Pod,
end this.
Get the hell out of here.
Let's just end this.
Let's turn the mic back on after we've been down there for a while.
Yeah.
And
we'll have some more of this.
Yeah. Academic drunk cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that. And I thought it was a really interesting sort of conclusion to the conference. I think that, you know, in the future, podcasting conferences, you know, maybe have to adopt more and more practice ingrained into the conference itself. But again, you know, conferences themselves have a very, I think, formalized structure these days. I'm always keen to think about the very structure of what a podcasting conference is. But Richard, what did you think of the final discussion there? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's the first time I've been to a conference where they've done that. They've had like a concluding discussion as a kind of one of the formal sessions. And actually, I really enjoyed it. I think we got a lot out of that because I think when you start discussions, it's like you're at a panel. You know, sometimes the best parts of the panel are when people start asking questions. And I think having that kind of quite relaxed sort of approach and that kind of more sort of discursive nature of it was really interesting. And I really kind of enjoyed that. I think we got a lot out of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, like I said before, I do have a sort of problem with the formalized 20 minutes paper, 10 minutes discussion that seems to be de rigueur for all conferences right now. I think that some thought needs to go into conference organization, and I'd say that as being guilty myself of having organized a conference that I would have liked to have been more experimental, but again, yeah, maybe that will happen in the future, perhaps around a podcast studies conference. I think that, you know, looking at the one that was over in America, the sound education one, they seem to have a lot more sort of discursive and practical based sessions, so maybe that is the way forward.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the fact we recorded it as a podcast, you know, it was a nice way to round that up as well.
Yeah, absolutely, that's for sure. So we hope you enjoyed that. We'll call it a day there. Not sure what the next episode is going to be. That, you know, that's, you'll just have to wait on tender hooks for that. Richard, great to speak to you again. You got any plans for the holiday season?
The holiday season, it still seems a long way off yet. So probably catching up on podcast or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything you've listened to that you can point our listeners to?
So many great things at the minute. It's been great to see. Have You Heard Georgie's podcast has made a comeback, currently on BBC Sound. So one of the things that came up in my paper in Mainz was talking about these commissions. So that's been one of those. Good kind of creative use of podcasting as this kind of more poetic medium, if you like, that allows sort of experimentation. So that's been really interesting. Also, a new podcast on Dolly Parton from Jad Abumrad.
Oh, wow.
The Radiolab guy. Again, great storytelling in there that has been really, really kind of interesting to look at. And one kind of sort of more studio-based thing, BBC Radio in the UK have brought out a new podcast called Hooked, which is about addiction. And they've actually brought in some addicts to talk about that and to lead that. And I think what's been really interesting in that is kind of the way in which that podcast format allows for kind of more honest discussion that I think kind of cuts to the heart of a topic like that. But yeah, some great stuff around that at the minute. Anything you found?
Well, I'm really happy that there's a new season of Slow Burn, which is around the whole sort of drama between Biggie and Tupac in America. So it goes back and looks at the sort of history of rap and the sort of political context around that. And it goes, every episode sort of takes that story of the killing and their careers and the whole sort of East Coast, West Coast animosity around rap at that time from different angles. And I'm not a big rap music fan, I have to say, but it's just so well done. And the stories are so interesting and the interviews are so well done. So that's really good. I'm looking forward to the new season of Against the Rules, which is Michael Lewis's podcast, which is coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm currently trying to finish off this paper on podcasts and cinema or cinematic podcasts. And then I'm doing my own episode, hopefully an experimental episode on The Cinematic Voice, which will go out on the Cinematologist podcast, which is my other podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. So much stuff's happening right now. And I think it's that sense of kind of medium maturity that I think, you know, is reflected in the fact that we had a conference and, you know, just the wealth of people talking about it right now. It's been really, it's really interesting. In fact, on Friday, I'm chairing a panel at the NCTJ, which is a Journalism Training Council conference, which they're holding here in Sunderland. And bringing a bunch of journalists together to talk about how they're using podcasting. So it's, you know, it is really hot right now. And I think that's got to be a good thing for anybody who's listening or studying it right now.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And hopefully new oral cultures will continue to be a part of that.